Association of Vehicle Administrators. Let's just start with a quick round of introductions so everybody knows who's here, and then we'll move to the adoption of the minutes from the previous meeting.
Max Haleprin.
Vaughn Bodelson.
Representative Carolyn Lane.
Kathy Bonifield.
Beth Fraser, Office of the Secretary of State.
Mark Ritchie.
Debbie Erickson.
Gary Poser.
David Maeda, League of Minnesota Cities.
Grace Bach-Leroitz.
Barb Welty, Townships.
Thank you. You've all received copies of the minutes from our last meeting. Any additions, corrections, changes? Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting?
Moved.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Thank you. Welcome, Senator. Today, our focus is on the voter registration relationship that has some questions about how we use the Department of Vehicle Services database. We'll be looking at some of the questions that have come up around facial recognition. Jeff Slagle, who will be our first presentation, is the national consultant or staff for the AMVA, the Association of Motor Vehicles Administrators, and his specific responsibility is identity management. And Jeff has been working with many of the states, including Minnesota, I believe, on a number of different issues related to how they work together on identity management, including some of the work around the IDs and driver's licenses that are used for access to Canada, but also on facial recognition. And he's going to give us an overview of how that work has unfolded in other states around the country. We'll have about a 10-minute presentation from Jeff, and then we'll have about 10 minutes for questions. And he's certainly available at future times for more direct conversations or for calling in again if we would like that or need that. And then we'll say goodbye to Jeff, and we'll move to a presentation by Pat McCormick, one of the members of our task force and the director of Driver and Vehicle Services, where they have been for a number of years using facial recognition and working with that, incorporating that into the service here. Jeff is going to be calling in. He hasn't called in yet. Are there any questions about today's agenda or things that people would like to talk about prior to Jeff calling in? I can know from people's emails to me that this question of facial recognition is kind of a big topic, and so how it specifically relates to driver's licenses and how it specifically relates to our DMV and our driver and vehicle services is a very much more limited topic, and I think today we'll be trying to keep it as narrow in as we can to what's relevant to us here in Minnesota, but that's in recognition that it's a very large topic. Pat, you've worked with Jeff. Do you want to give us any more background that would be useful for everyone here to know?
Well, I was on the AMVA board for a number of years, 6 years, I think. I just resigned from the board and at the end of this term, and I was a board advisor to his Secure ID committee, and that's a committee that works, it's continuously is reviewing and updating the policies that are used to recommend to all state jurisdictions how to ensure that your card is secure, and also to establish certain standards that all states should be using in terms of the features and the use of the driver license and identification cards. And that also comes into play looking at international standards as well. And so Jeff has also spent some time working internationally as well on ensuring that all states and countries have similar characteristics to secure their credentials across the world.
Great. Great. Thanks for the background.
So he's got a lot of experience.
Jeff, is that you on the phone?
Yes.
Just a second. We're going to try to make you a little bit louder.
Okay.
I think that worked. Jeff, Pat McCormick just gave us a nice kind of overview and introduction of your work, both within AMVA and also internationally. I really appreciate you taking time today to give us about 10-minute overview of how facial recognition has been used in different states around the country with motor vehicles, and then leaving some time for questions from members of the task force. And if we need to do some follow-up, we can do that as well. But thank you again, and I'll turn it over to you for an overview and getting us started.
Okay. Secretary Ritchie, thank you for the opportunity to actually join you today. Facial recognition and I guess maybe biometrics in general a place for me, just because of the work that I'm involved in and the things that I have been working for inside of the AMVA space. As you probably know from Pat, AMVA's membership is made up not just of the motor vehicle administrations, but also of the state and provincial law enforcement agencies. So, you know, the challenge of making sure that we know who people are when we're interacting with them is a significant one. And on the front of being able to have something that can assist in making sure that a claim on identity can be authenticated is you know, very, very, very significant. So if we go back in time, and I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest, you know, history here, quickly people understood that there were people that were defrauding the MVAs, and they were coming in and they were getting multiple licenses, you know, in different names, basically different identities. And at some point, someone said, well, look, you know, a fundamental of identification security is making sure that whoever that individual is that's presenting themselves actually has something that is connected to that vetted, authenticated identity, and that's going to either be a physiological characteristic that uniquely identifies that person, or it's going to be a behavioral characteristic. And it quickly became clear to the AMVA community that on the physiological side, something that we already had that could be leveraged was the photos that were collected for issuing both driver licenses and non-driver IDs. But what's been interesting as this work has progressed over the last, and we've had some people that have been you know, working around and using facial recognition for 15 plus years, is that when asked the question, you know, are you using facial recognition, it will not provide you with enough details or enough of an answer for it to really be valuable. And there's a lot of moving pieces here, and I can tell you that, you know, many of them are, sometimes the quality of the images that are being worked with are not actually meeting the standards that would need to be met in order for you to yield an optimal benefit. Another piece to this is that sometimes an image is being queried for the purposes of just verifying that a candidate is a match to it, versus the ability to actually go into a database of images and search all of them to rule that particular candidate out, make sure that they're not already in your system. So AMVA, in trying to get a better grasp on this, and had been asked the question, you know, in the wake of 9/11, when there was a call for reform in the area of driver licensing, they spent time researching this, trying to figure out, okay, of the biometric technologies that are available and pervasive today, is there one that might answer the call for the community? And I truly believe that the reports have shown that there was not really a definitive answer. And, you know, facial recognition had some pros and had some cons, the pros being that everybody had already offered up a photograph. A con was an assumption that because you had a photograph, it automatically meant that you could turn facial recognition on. And it simply isn't. It's just not that clean and neat. So by our account, as of right now, there's something on the order of maybe 45 plus jurisdictions in both the U.S. and Canada that are using facial recognition. But it's not necessarily being done in the same way. And as you know from some of the conversations, Secretary, that you and I have had, there are some standouts of some examples of where someone has been able to implement a program, and it has yielded what I would say are undeniable benefits. And the one that probably comes to mind the most for me is New York State, where they were successful in being able to identify literally thousands of potential cases of fraud. And then in being able to investigate those and then ultimately prosecute those that they were able to bring quite a number of people to justice that had defrauded them and were not just defrauding them, but then in conversations that they may be having with some of the other agencies in the state, find out that there's fraud not just happening at DMV, but there's fraud, you know, happening with some of these other agencies. One of the things that makes New York special is not just the success that they've had, but then also the size of the resources that they've had to actually do this work. And I wish that every state had the kind of investigative staff that New York has, because they obviously are a larger state, but they actually have full-time dedicated investigators that have arrest authority, and they're able to go out and they're able to do what they need to do, where many of the other states that we've talked to that are doing facial recognition don't actually have an ability to do much on their own, and they have to investigate and collect as much information as they can and then turn it over to what is a completely different process depending on the jurisdiction that you're talking about. So I wish that I could say that there was a little bit more clarity on exactly how facial recognition was truly being used and what all the ins and outs were of the technology. But I can tell you that it is something that's important and that it's something that requires clarity, so much so that ANVA this year, and we've just literally gone ahead and gotten the green light to do this, is assembling a working group made up of jurisdictional members, both DMV and law enforcement, with technical experts coming in from the FBI, from NIST, and a couple of other areas. And we are going to be studying over the next 2 years this at a deeper level, so that as an association we are able to make better policies, better recommendations, and hopefully actually encourage not just the adoption but the adherence to actual standards, because I do believe that part of why we're not in a better position right now as a community is that we truly have not met the standards that existed when they started going down the road of trying to implement. So that's going to be taking place over the next 2 years, and they will be dealing with the issues of exactly, you know, who should have access to, you know, to these images. There are certain jurisdictions where law enforcement has the green light to go in and go against the MVA's database. There are other examples where there's actually a statute that clearly says that they can't do that. And it's just simply not really, you know, this technology is not being implemented in a similar way. And that's kind of where things are at the moment. And I obviously, not just now, but moving forward, would be delighted to keep you informed and briefed as to the progress of our working group.
Thank you very much. Great overview and giving us, I think, a sober look at something that's exciting, but obviously big and got a lot of things to be figured out. I want to move to questions that people have for you, and I have a short one I want to start with, and then we'll move on. Can you just give us a sense of what did it cost New York to clean theirs up, and what does it cost them, let's say, annually? I'm assuming they're more than twice our size, but it would be useful just to know that, if you know that.
I unfortunately don't. I understood in one of the emails that I got that Owen McShane, their director of investigations, might have been able to join you today. Had he been on the call, he definitely would have been the person to answer that question. I wouldn't even be able to wager a guess.
Great. Thanks. We're going to get Owen one of these times. He's at a conference today. So, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Jeff Terry-Bonoff. I have a question with regard to, you mentioned the ability of using the facial recognition to do matches versus actually, you know, going through to find people, and it sounded like the match piece of it was easier. Could you address that, and in what ways this has been used for matches, who's doing that, and what your thoughts are?
Okay. It's a great question, and it goes to the fundamentals of biometrics in general. So not just facial recognition, but other biometric technologies to include finger imaging and iris recognition. And it's as simple as this. You have what they would call in the vernacular verifications, which are a candidate or an individual is who they claim to be, and you're able to immediately go into a record and verify that by being able to do a one-to-one match. I come to you and I say, you know, I am Jeff Slagle. I do have a license there. I live in St. Paul, and you're able to go into a record. You're able to then have an image that then, again, and here's another example of where, you know, the waters start to get a little bit muddy. Not all facial recognition algorithms or methodologies are the same. So the way that one vendor might do it, for example, a company like NEC, is going to be different than a company like a Safran. But the principles are that, you know, you'll take my picture, it will go through an algorithm that will convert it to a template, and that template will then be compared to a template that would be yielded by doing the same thing with the image that you have stored in your database. And that one-to-one just simply says, I set a threshold at, and again, it depends on the severity of the risk. There's a difference between, and, you know, the classic examples are always, you know, a person checking out a book at a library and a person that's trying to get access to a nuclear facility. So let's say in your all's scenario, because of the importance of making sure that folks are who they claim to be in order to vote, you want to set that threshold relatively high. You want to have confidence that they are who they say they are, and that one-to-one goes and says, okay, it met at least that threshold, so I have confidence that, you know, that this is in fact a match. With the one-to-many in the biometric world, that's referred to as identification. It really is the, I'm not necessarily cooperating with you, and you can't assume that I am. I'm offering up my image. I may say to you, I don't exist inside your database, but you don't know if I do or don't without actually going through your database and checking. And oftentimes, and I know that Minnesota, and I don't know all the details, but I know that you've been in a process of trying to do a scrub of your database, which is really a reconciliation of all of those images to try to figure out, okay, are there duplicates in here? Is this person already in there? And what is interesting, and what I have heard anecdotally from other people that I've worked with, is that when they turned the facial recognition capability on, they then all of a sudden discovered that they had many people that, like, didn't know that they'd done that. They'd come back into contact with the system, and when they came in, and let's say it was Jeff Slagle, but they said that they were Joe Smith, when the search was done with their image, not only did they find Jeff Slagle had a match with the image, but there was also a John Doe, there was also a Philip Johnson, there was also, you know, several other people. And upon a further investigation of this, concluded that the person was actually in the database multiple times under different identities. And so if you have seen or heard people talk about, you know, again, the fact that they're using facial recognition, it's not an automatic that all people right now inside the AMVA community that are using facial recognition are actually employing the one-to-many capability. There are several jurisdictions that are simply doing a verification, and that is to say that, you know, when a person comes back in contact with the system for whatever that transaction might be, renewing a driver's license or titling a vehicle or registering a vehicle, if there's a need for them to go ahead and verify their identity, they can do that. But they don't necessarily go to the troubles of trying to make sure that that person doesn't already exist in their system.
Follow up. Yeah. Thank you. That's very helpful. Jeff, follow-up question. We had sort of assumed that the process would look more like, okay, somebody shows their ID, they say they are who they say they are, and then the judge would look at a picture out of the database, look up and see, oh, yes, you look like, you know, you who are
okay.
Standing here. But it sounds to me like what you're suggesting is that it would be much better to employ the take a picture and then do the photo verification that way.
Yeah, and actually, I'm really, really happy that you asked that or some clarification on this, because this is something, and it truly is not a semantic. When people talk about facial recognition, and when this is being talked about in the context of it being a biometric, it is an automated process that is done by a machine, not a human being. So when you have a scenario where you're interacting with somebody and you're trying to verify, you know, whether the person is who they say they are, that photo image of the individual on a credential or even on a screen, if the comparison and a judgment is solely being made by a person, that's not a biometric and that's not facial recognition. So, you know, facial recognition absolutely implies that, you know, this is actually an automated process that is being done by machines.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Secretary and Mr. Slagle, a couple questions. We've had tossed around here in this state the idea of image capture in the polling place, not only for verification, also possibly for enrollment. Is it true that the motor vehicle community and the National Institute of Standards Technology that you mentioned have studied how important controlled lighting and controlled pose are, and how big a deal is that? And then also, is there any information on whether demographic characteristics, sex, ethnicity, age, body mass have any bearing on the accuracy of facial recognition?
Well, I'll start with the latter first. facial recognition systems are not impacted by the age of an individual, their ethnicity. I would caveat that just by saying that, you know, there are people that are unfortunately, you know, physically scarred or harmed in such a way that, you know, there might be parts of their face where, you know, whatever the algorithm is that's being used, you know, could potentially be affected. But generally speaking, what you've just described does not really impact the technology. What can impact the technology, though, is the first part of what you were asking. And it is true that NIST has done studies, and there is information that's out there that says, you know, lighting is important, and the quality of the image is important. Now, the other thing that's interesting about those studies is that it's exposed maybe some myths, and, you know, one of them was that you needed a super, super high resolution image, and you don't necessarily need a super, super high resolution image, but there are some other factors that you know, go into the mix, and I'm just talking from experience. This may not be an issue in Minnesota, but it certainly has been an issue in other states and provinces where, you know, the quality of the images are all over the board, and you can quickly look at driver licenses and see that there really isn't good uniformity necessarily in the images that have been used to make the driver licenses and non-driver IDs. Lighting is different, pose is different, the size is different, and again, a lot of facial recognition algorithms start, at least as a starting point, with the area around the eyes, and that becomes problematic. So there absolutely is enough research to show that there's very good, important variables that have to be, you know, in play in order to yield optimal results. And I think that the big value as a standards professional, the big value there is knowing that from here forward, we have an opportunity to actually implement some changes that I think in the long term will yield benefit. I'm not convinced that the existing databases that may be a decade old, that you can really go back and maybe hope to have the same kind of accuracy that you might have moving forward, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Thank you. Jeff, I know that in Minnesota we've had a number of prosecutions based on the earlier scrub. I think one person had 11 different identifications, but one of the companies said that somebody in Indiana had 135. Does any state beat Indiana in that regard?
Secretary, I have to be honest. I'm not sure that that's legitimate. I have good friends there in Indiana. I'll have to verify that. But no, I've never heard of a number that high. I have heard, and I would believe this. You know, there are several people out there that had dozens.
Yes, and I understand from New York that they found twins who didn't know they had twins.
Right.
And they chose not to tell them, thankfully, I think. But anyhow, there's many angles to this whole question that we had probably not really thought about until we started.
Well, and I would agree with you. I guess maybe if there was one thing that I really wanted to leave you with today, you know, it was this, you know, and this is somewhat of a lament on my part, again, given my you know, my role and my desire to help my community, you know, in becoming more standardized, they're not there. And it does appear that, you know, there's, you know, a bit of work ahead of us as a community to get to that point. I'm hopeful, and I hope I'm not putting too many eggs in the basket of this working group that AMVA's starting, but I'm really hopeful that the work that this group does do will go some way to assisting the membership in, you know, an implementation of this technology in a way that it better accomplishes the things that we're hoping it will accomplish.
Jeff, thank you so much. We have one more question, and then we're going to, after you, go to our friend Pat McCormick and hear about this in Minnesota.
I just had a question about how much of a person's face needs to be in the image. You know, do glasses matter? Does wearing something over your face matter? There are people for religious reasons do that. I just want to understand how much of the face you need to see in order to have the match.
Right, and that goes again back to the point I made about not all facial recognition vendors use the same methodologies. So there are some out there that use what is commonly referred to as just a mask, and it's just the area around the eyes. And then there are others that involve the entire face. Intuitively, the more points of comparison that you have, the higher probability of accuracy you have. And again, from an identity management point of view, and I think AMVA has this in writing by way of policy, you know, discourage the practice of there's very little value in taking a picture of a person that's completely covered up except for their eyes. The thing with glasses, some of the newer facial recognition algorithms are actually doing okay with a person that has their glasses on, and it doesn't affect it the way that it would have 10 years ago. But then a caveat on that is a tint. So there's a difference between wearing glasses and wearing sunglasses. So you can't have someone that's wearing, you know, darker tint glasses, or else that does absolutely affect the accuracy.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Schlegel, thank you for being on the phone today. Appreciate it. This is Senator Mary Kiffmeyer. And my question for you is, on the facial recognition, is this fundamentally based upon the bone structure and those points versus soft tissue?
The way that I would answer that is to just simply say there are points on the face that are plotted, and I've never had anybody make a point of saying that, you know, it was a person's, you know, bone structure that, you know, cause them to be more accurately identified or less accurately identified.
How many points, Jeff? Just guessing, roughly.
Again, it's going to depend on the kind of algorithm and the kind of technology or the technology provider that you're using. And unfortunately, the other thing that I'll say on this is that as we've looked into this and we've tried to get our arms around this, because with finger imaging, to use finger imaging as a comparison, it has been historically there was one way of determining whether or not you had a match with a fingerprint, and that was simply, you know, either bifurcations or ridge endings. And that worked great for being able to identify what we refer to as minutia points. Unfortunately, other methodologies started emerging on how you can capture those unique characteristics in something like a finger image. And the same is true with a facial image. So the way that one company is doing it is going to be different than the way another company is doing it. And I tend to be a little cynical when I am subjected to marketing fluff, where I might put a little bit more stock into something that, you know, is produced by, say, you know, a NIST. So it's a long way of saying I can't give you anything that I think is going to be of any value to you, except I would say that in the work that you're doing, always put anything that is being provided to you by a vendor, you know, through a filter, and you know, be a little quicker, you know, to pay attention to something that's coming in from someone that doesn't necessarily have a dog in the fight as far as, you know, making a sale.
So NIST is our national technology institute that has been doing, I think, annual competitions between the different companies to see whose algorithm is the most successful. And I think that our hometown company has done quite well more or less every year. But I think we're all used to fluff and marketing, and so it seems like in this area you have to have the same kind of concentration on what are the goals that you've got and how does a product reach that goal more than just some of them now claiming like 1,000 points or something like that in the process.
And that's really for me not of any value. What is of more value is, you know, through time and history putting up, you know, the performance of facial recognition against another biometric technology. And admittedly, facial recognition has gotten much, much better over the last decade, but it still comes nowhere close to the accuracy of something like finger imaging.
Jeff, thank you very, very much. And, of course, we want to stay in touch with you. You've been an enormous help for me over the last 2.5 years trying to sort some of this. And I hope that we as a state can contribute to this working group over the next couple years. And we look forward to following up and staying in touch with you. And just really appreciate you taking this time today. So thank you very much.
No, very happy to do it. And I wish you the best. And as I said, as the working group moves forward here on the AMVA side, we would be delighted to go ahead and share those results, the research as it is fleshed out.
Thank you so much. Bye, Jeff.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Pat, for keeping our friend Jeff so happy to be helping us in Minnesota, and thank you for offering to bring us up to date to what's happening here.
Sure. Do you want me to sit up there?
Wherever you...
I'll sit up here.
Okay. Pat, are we part of that working group?
Mr. Chair, no, we're not part of the working group. They already had enough members by the time. And the other thing is right now... our staff are really stretched because we're working on our MNLAR system and trying to have the resources to get our work done, and work on MNLARs has been quite a challenge. But we'll keep in close touch to hear more about the what's going on with that group. And so I did provide you with a handout that goes through, kind of outlines it, but I'll use the outline that was provided in the agenda to kind of talk through that. But this gives you a summary of our facial recognition program. And our facial recognition program started in 2008. DVS used grant funding from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration to complete a facial scrub of its database at that time of 16 million photos that dated back to 1999. And as we've been discussing, the scrub involves comparing each digital image to every other one in the database to identify similar features. If photo images exceed a certain tolerance level, then they are flagged for further investigation. After our scrub, 1.2 million photo images were identified as requiring further review, and DVS staff spent significant time reviewing those photos to narrow the review of photos to 5 categories. One was entry error, and by that it means that the data doesn't fit with the application. Name changes, no fraud, or overlay. And by overlay, I'm talking about where they're issuing the driver's license from looking at an application. And if they're working very quickly, what we found that oftentimes they may not totally close that application that they're working on. And so some of the data may stay there. And so that would mean that that image might contain not the correct data. And so that might be one of the reasons that there was that we needed to review it further. So the second reviews right now of 7,069 images are still being completed to determine if these cases relate to identity fraud. And that means that then they would need to be investigated. And by investigated, first of all, we require that our driver evaluation staff, letters are sent out to these individuals, and they're given the opportunity to come in and talk with the driver evaluation staff to determine if there is indeed a reason why some mistake was made and the person is who they say they are. And so it is one identity. So everybody gets a letter. They are entitled to due process. Everyone gets a letter. They're able to come in and explain what the reason might be that we have two different driver licenses or IDs on file, and provide their story. You may have seen in one case there were identical twins that looked like they matched up, and so we brought them in. And certainly in most cases that's what does happen, but there are very many people that do not have, usually the ones that don't come in for the interview and don't come in for trying to prove who they say they are the majority of ones that are canceled because we only allow a certain amount of time for them to come in. Usually it's about they have to at least notify us within 2 weeks, and then if they don't come in at all, then their licenses are canceled. So only driver services coordination staff have been assigned to this task, and that's one very small unit within driver services. And so that's why we still have the second review of 7,069 images to be completed to determine if they need further investigation. And as I said, then driver evaluation staff are involved in the interview process. So I think one of the things that lessons learned from this first facial recognition project is, first of all, we need to narrow the scope of possible matches. And one of the other things is that some of the photo images were not very good, especially the earlier photos from earlier that dated back into the 1999-2000 year. And so those were some of the issues, as well as that we need to increase the threshold to 99%. And I don't know the scientific description of how to describe that to you, but that's what we've been told in working with experts, that we do need to increase it so that we can really hone in on the ones that really would lead to fraud and people that may be trying to have different or separate or multiple identities. So our plans for future scrubs, we have a plan to begin a future scrub, and we're looking at that scrub taking 15 to 17 weeks to process. We currently have 18.3 million images in the system, and 7.1 million are new from the period of August 1st, 2008. And when we do this scrub, that's where we'll go back to those images that start at that time. That'll be used as the cutoff for the scrub. So that means that we're assuming that it'll be somewhere between 18.5 and 19 million images that will be the total database to scrub against. And the cost for that scrub will be $495,000. We have a grant that we were able to receive from FEMA. It was a FEMA 2011 DL security grant for $829,411 for this project. So $470,000 of the grant funding will be used for the scrub. $73,000 will be used for facial recognition software licenses that need to be purchased, and then $286,400 will be used for funding to pay for the staff that will be needed for this unit. And what our plans are is to have a specific facial recognition unit. The job just is not able to get done when we're trying to work with our driver services coordination staff, which is a small staff. It's only six or seven people in addition to doing their other responsibilities. And so we did request hiring a unit, the funding for hiring a unit supervisor, and that hiring will occur in the beginning of fiscal year 2014, so that'll be September of 2014, and we would we're hoping to have a unit of three staff who are totally working just on facial recognition. And the scope of the work for facial recognition software purchase and installation, we would be rolling that software out to 126 driver license agent offices and 14 exam stations. Those are the exam stations that have cameras at them, because there are a lot of other exam stations where we just do testing, and they don't. Then they go to a driver's license agent to get the rest of the process completed. Our current card vendor will provide the training and modules, and will provide for training our staff, and that will be done by February of 2014. And the staff experts are in place to provide the technical and ongoing training and support from our driver coordination unit at the current time. So our work plan has also included input from DPS Minute related to the design, security, and implementation of the facial recognition unit program. And it's determined that in the future, the parameters will be continuing to narrow so that we should be able to get effective results in terms of identity fraud. It's also been determined, as I said before, that the quality of the photos is extremely important, and so we're hopeful that with the new cameras that we've purchased for all of our driver license agents and for our exam stations, that will be very helpful in terms of getting good quality images that will be helpful to use this software for. So with that, before I go on, I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
You mentioned the difficulty of getting good quality images, using special equipment for that, special training, get people, I think it's like plus or minus 5 degrees they're supposed to be within, or that sort of thing. And you're doing this for 140 locations. Do you have any perspective on whether it's plausible to do that kind of training and that kind of equipment at thousands of polling places?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure. It's hard for me to know. I think it would be, that would certainly be a question you'd want to be talking to any vendor about in terms of the type of training they're suggesting. But I think when we've done the training, we've done it in smaller groups. And so I would assume you'd have to do the training outside of, you know, you'd have to probably do it at locations, but not do it at every single if you didn't want to do it at every single office, I think it'd be pretty costly to do that. So you'd have to have training sessions, which is what we did last time. But we didn't train enough people is what our major problem was. So I think it depends on the number of people that are trained. That's what you really need. And the number that then are focused on ensuring that they're viewing those images and making a decision, and they feel comfortable making that decision. after reviewing them. It kind of depends on what the process would be also that you're using. For us, we're a central issue state, and so what that means is we don't do things at the counter. We don't issue a driver's license. All the images come into our office, and they're reviewed again, and then that's when we issue the application. So there's a second review of all the information on that application. We review it a second time, and we also direct our staff that are face-to-face with customers to note if they believe that there could be potential fraud. And so that's another reason that we might look more closely at certain applications. But I think if you're doing things face-to-face and not doing it, you know, where that's you're focusing, it may be challenging.
Thank you.
Senator Kipman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, question I have for you is, how does this new software compare to the old software? What are the differences between those two? Because currently a citizen would come in and take a photo. And so what's the difference that's happening here from what's in current and what you're proposing here?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, I think that the software certainly has improved since we started this project back in 2008. But we were using images from 1999, and I definitely know I started with DVS in 2000, and I definitely know that the software has improved in the cameras that we've been using since then. So a lot of it has to do with the software and just the improvements that they've made to have better pictures that more clearly define the features of the person in the photo. In addition to that, I just think that some of it is that you have to have the time and people that are trained. And we do have people that are trained. We just don't have enough in terms of doing it with everything else we need to do in that unit. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, just humorous a little bit. I think we're sometimes for citizens we could be trained in how to not look so horribly ugly in those photos. But I understand that might be going a bit too far. Keep your chin down, by the way. My key after a few of these. I think one of the things that I'm noticing on your here is that real-time facial recognition match. Could you explain what that is? It looks like that is something new.
Well, we wouldn't be doing. I think what we meant is that in that we would be trying to ensure that we have the new capabilities to get the crisper pictures. We're not doing real time in terms of we're not going to issue over the counter. That process is not changing at all. So what that means, though, is that we may be able to have. The other photos we do have right now, you can see if someone comes in and they don't have their driver's license, we can pull up an image to see them if they already are licensed with us. So we can verify that that is the person that they're saying they are. That wasn't always the case. And so I think in that respect, we do have that available to us now. But people can change as well, and you still need to ensure that that person is who they say they are, and you have people that are coming in for their first licenses, so you wouldn't be able to compare it to other data as well. So
I can just follow up a little bit more with that, Ms. McCormick. Yeah, I'm getting a little bit better idea of what you're meaning. My definition of real time was more that while they're there and you're taking the photo, that when you take the photo, that real time meant you would compare to the database to see if there was any duplicate or anything else done through this software system while you have the person still there. Real time, that's kind of what I thought this meant. Does that come close at all, or am I still not quite clear on it?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, you will be able to tell to a certain degree. But you can't, that wouldn't be the only way you would be able to tell. What we usually always tell our staff is that We wouldn't necessarily confront a person at the office. We would take it back and review it again. We would mark, as I said, we might mark it as possible fraud or needing further investigation. So those would be the things that we would be looking for. We wouldn't necessarily confront them right at that moment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I can certainly understand. I wouldn't want any of them as well. But am I still correct in understanding, though, that if they come in to take their photo, that there would be some sort of an initial screening process while they are there?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, that's my understanding. There would be some direction that would be given. That's why we would be doing this additional training for all of our staff.
Okay. I just have another question.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel like it's so important to let the presenter get through their whole presentation and try to hold the questions. So I just had a few. If you have these grant dollars here right now to initiate this project, are you able to continue it with, because DVS is a self-funded through fees, are you then able to have the funding that you need to continue the program going forward?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, I think we will have enough funding for that purpose at that particular time. I think what we're looking at is, as we're building MNLARS, we believe that that will create some efficiencies where, I also have to state right at this particular time, we are having many staff retire as well, so that as people retire, it may be then that we would take different positions and use them towards this unit, mm-hmm. which okay. is what we do usually when we're making changes in terms of trying to improve our programs.
It's okay. Thank
mm-hmm.
you. I appreciate that very much. And I think that I know that our original discussion some while ago, a year and a half or so ago, had to do more with the election judges doing kind of a facial recognition, that an election judge would look at an ID and then, or look at a person or look at a photo that was in the system, and that the election judge themselves would be doing this sort of work. And I've always felt that it's that, especially after you see about 10 people, you start losing your ability to distinguish much at all, much less the software being an assist to that sort of thing. But I just find that was the original thing, was having more to do with a human being doing that. And I think what we've seen here today, it's fairly difficult even for a machine, much less a human being. But I think what I do see in all of this is that if an ID is used in anywhere that we function in society, that with the work that you're doing, there'll be a greater level of confidence of it actually being a tool for identity, that we can have a greater degree of confidence. Would be a more fair assessment of the value of this tool?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, yes. I just think that we want to ensure that people are who they say they are, and that they have met the requirements that they need to have either a Minnesota ID or a Minnesota driver's license.
Well, I think there are several people who have had fraud issues with identity being stolen who would be very glad to see that, you know, something like this could help prevent some of the destruction that comes from people stealing it. And this is probably one of the few tools that can help to objectively protect those who are innocent and to capture those who are wrong. And so I'm glad to see this being done, and thank you for all the information.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm glad also that Commissioner Parnell is sitting here, and I see the coordination of a minute as part of this. And so it seems to me, as we read about some of the problems that we're having with regard to eligibility verification and some of the potential fraud that goes on with other agencies, that as time goes on, the coordination of what you're doing with the other access points that our citizenry come into our system will be critical. And so I am pleased that crossover is happening. And then this is a personal opinion question, which I'm not trying to put you on the spot, and I won't hold you to it. But given where you are in this process and given the task that this group has before them, if you had to say when your work would be at a point whereby it could be used to assist in the election verification process, when would you see that as a potential?
You can choose to answer that, or you can choose to not answer that if you would like.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonhoff, what I would say is that our MNLARS project is not scheduled to be completed until 2017, and I would not see us being able to handle any additional responsibilities until after that time.
Thanks.
I'd like to say a couple things about the New York example because, you know, they are really the star in this in a way. And their unit has 24, and I'm sure you won't have 24, but it's a serious piece of work. But they were forced into it in a way because they had a bus driver flip a bus of gamblers traveling and killed 17 on his fourth license as a drunk driver. And the governor said, clean up the system, and they did spectacularly, and now they arrest 6 to 8 per day attempting, and they used to do it in the DMV, and they figured out that wasn't such a good idea, so they do it at night. But they got a lot of federal money to study why did people get multiple licenses, and it was not, I would say, rocket science, but half were drunk drivers and the other half were trying to defraud Veterans Administration, public housing, et cetera. And there was a little tiny sliver that were really dangerous people, but half were basically drunks and half were attempting to defraud. And I know the convictions that have taken place in Minnesota, based on your good work, have mostly been around the question of fraud, defrauding agencies. But I think for those of us who have a belief in wanting safety on the highways, whatever is the mechanism for stopping people who lose their licenses because of drunk driving or some other traffic violation from getting back on the road, or the man who was convicted with 11 Minnesota licenses. I mean, that alone, one bad traffic accident and ambulance to the hospital and all the cost of a drunk driving accident is more than the cost of this cleaning up of our system in some ways. And, of course, to keep our system clean over time will cost. But the savings, and I think New York, by doing that big study and giving us that data, tells us that this can be both beneficial to those of us in elections, certainly beneficial to the passport agency. I know they worry about this a lot, but also can make our highways safer, can prevent fraud in other agencies. There are just so many benefits that will come from your work, already has come from your work, but will come from your work in the future. And I'm sorry we couldn't get Owen, the person from Highway Patrol in New York, on today, but perhaps if we are interested in getting more information, New York is really a model, and he could call in at a future meeting if people would like to do it. I wonder if there are more questions for Ms. McCormick.
Yeah, I did.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. McCormick, when I was just looking at kind of some of these numbers, you know, the $1.2 million and the $769 and so on, I was curious as to what percent of the $1.2 million were in entry error, fraud, you know, each of those five categories. Is it possible to get the percent and number of those and somewhat of a breakdown a little bit of what the issues were? I would suspect you might have that, or of the 9,014 that were canceled. Just get a little bit more of a breakdown of information there, if that's possible.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, yes, we do track why we canceled the license. And so I could get you that breakdown. As I said, we still have a number to go through, but certainly I can give you the breakdown of what we've done so far.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. McCormick. What a big job. Thank you very much. The last item on our agenda is the pilot project polling station visit confirmations. I think some of you have already expressed interest. You have in your packet the overall list, and you have the map. Are there any questions about this? Ms. Welty?
Time-wise, what are we looking at viewing these? I'm interested in possibly going to Dilworth, but I'm looking at the amount of time that we would be spending at the individual places.
I think it's, let me make sure I'm correct, but I think it's a little bit individualistic. Okay. If you want to get up in the morning and you've got your letter and they know, you know, whatever, then when it fits your day, you zip over there and take a look at it.
Okay.
And you know how busy it is there at like about 12, so avoid the rush hour. And other questions?
Mr. Chair, who is it that we asked for the letter? Is it your office, right? Okay. Are all of the committee automatically getting a letter, or is it something we have to request on an individual basis?
So far, we've just been taking requests. Okay. Is anybody, I mean, I don't want to put people on a spot here. If you're, I mean, a lot of people said they weren't necessarily interested. They had work to do on that particular. Wait, what are you talking about? Forget it. I think you want one. So let's just, can I just send a sheet of paper around? Hold it. You just put your name on here if you want a letter.
Do we need a letter, David? Yes.
You don't.
I don't.
David?
Well, not for your own polling place, but for any
other.
You don't
need one.
No, I'll be a little busy that day.
Bart?
I will need one.
I would like to.
You want to?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I will point out that our Ward 2 Precinct A is actually in the community center is part of City Hall, so that's a good one to visit for people because I'll be there, I guess. I can answer
so
questions.
Say that one again. Say it out loud.
It's Ward 2 Precinct A, or community center, is actually part of the City Hall where I'll be most of the day.
We can make the letters flexible. We have provided letters to the staff of the House and Senate Republican Caucus, as well as to Max, who are three of the people that have requested them so far. And the letters provided access to the Metro polling places because that's what they indicated they were interested in. So we can provide one that doesn't necessarily specify exactly which polling place you're going to, but we just need to provide a letter that includes.
Great.
And I would actually like to visit Morehead, too, because I'd like
sure.
to see the different vendors.
Sure.
Great. And if you're going to St. Paul, a good one is 6-4. I'll be at 6-4. If you're invited to come, and I'll make sure you get a cookie.
We should be bringing treats to these. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Please.
After asking Mr. Slagle about gender, race, age, those sorts of things, did look back, pulled out my smartphone, and looked back at the NIST site, and the most recent thing I was able to find was 2010 seems to indicate that there are some effects from those kind of variables. So I guess I would just ask that if it seems plausible at all to be doing facial recognition at the polling place, that we might want to delve a little more into whether accuracy is, you know, correlated with what might be sensitive topics.
Other questions, comments? Great.
Mr. Chair, in my past life, I was a deputy registrar as recent as 2 years ago and have worked with Pat McCormick on driver's licensing. Specifically this, the office I was in had the new camera. And I just want to point out that technology may improve, but that particular camera is stationary. It does take several seconds for it to recalibrate, to identify those points. The individual does have to be stationary and to look forward. So I do caution that I question whether that capability could occur in a poll, if that's what you're referring to.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to make a comment here as well. In my perspective, I never really thought of until sometime in the distant future that in the polling places, because that's a voting place, and the staff there are trained to conduct elections. There's a lot of things going on for just those points you made. But I've always felt that the strength of the ID can be that you have one. And so that should be one that we should have a great deal of confidence. And I think the work that Ms. McCormick is doing is really, really important to that. But that the polling place wasn't necessarily the place that I ever thought of in this short-term future that we can look ahead at, that we'd be putting that upon our election judges, either in person, that they would be doing the matching up, or necessarily with the technology, because I think the points are being made very well there. But I do think taking a tool that is already established and does have the staff and the qualification to establish that tool to be used can have a connection point in the polling places on election day that can help ease election administration, that maybe could have some other kinds of uses. But I just wanted to clarify that never in my mind did I ever think that we would be putting this upon our election workers, the purchase of the software, the running of that kind of work, or upon our election judges. We should be thinking of ways that we can help them ease the burden, not add to it, on election day and clear it through. So I think it's a great exercise to take a look at it, you know, to kind of consider that, because sometimes you don't know till you ask. But when I look at that and then the more information I hear, it just affirms my earlier thought that is not the case. But I think the work that DVS is doing is absolutely crucial. And maybe there are some touch points that was also talked about in the original proposal that this may be useful, not necessarily in a legal identity or facial recognition, but some usefulness around some things that are there. And I don't know that we have investigated that possibility yet. Is there any other information? I mean, this was specific to this, and we needed to have the time sufficiently to delve into this. Is this the only time we'll touch on this subject?
Well, Senator Kipmeyer, I think we're going to try to dig into it as deep as we would like. I'm really open, like, for example, if folks would like to hear from New York their specific experience, because I think they're one of the most advanced in terms of making use of this. You know, I think everybody wants to go as deep as we can within certain kind of time limits to get as much information out as possible. So ideas that you have or suggestions mm-hmm. or...
Well, I'm just remembering when you were in my office and we were having the initial discussion, and the discussion at that time was the usefulness of, say, those of having a same-day voter registration where somebody didn't have any ID at all and they're there with you. That there could be a photo taken, not just as a matter, not as a legal creation of an identity, but a photo that would just assist us at some
record.
Kind of a thing that would assist us at some time in the future as a level of technology that doesn't have all of these facial recognition and all these legal creation of identities, but more, I think you use a very good word, as a record. It helps to clear people, as well as if there is some potential going on, it helps to affirm an election judge. But it takes more off of the election judge of their memory, the responsibilities, and gives us a simple tool that can be used with an iPad. Just a thought, if that could be considered. Because you had mentioned it, described it then, I thought we ought to maybe follow that thought a little bit.
And I think there's some other individuals in our community, for example, the head of our Passport Bureau, who has, I think, done a lot of thinking, and he's on the national committee for how they handle their identity management and stuff. So maybe what I can do is begin asking around for people who are using it. I wouldn't use the word informal, but let's say using it for a purpose like a record, or, you know, what are some of the other things that people are doing? And Jeff Slagle has a very good national overview. I mean, he's sort of mm-hmm. out there all the time, and
great.
I'll follow up with him. But I think I will try to, if I can get Owen McShade from New York maybe next time to talk. They just did such a good job there.
Just to take on what Senator Kiffmeyer had to say, and this is regarding at the polling place. Number one, an awful lot of the rural polling places do not have the lighting at all to take any sort of pictures. And also, it would frighten we have a lot hard time getting judges to begin with, and that new technology would frighten a lot of our judges. So I'm very concerned with we can't get judges now and what would happen if we'd make a lot of changes.
Other questions, Senator?
Mr. Chair, it sounds to me just from sitting around this table in this short amount of time that there really isn't much work that's been done around the country around photo or fingerprint verification for election purposes. Is that accurate? Is there literally none?
I think it's fair to say there's little. You know, we need to dig further.
So, Mr. Chair, do you know of any?
I know that Colorado and Nevada have had some public discussions, and I was invited to both states and was actually able to go to Nevada to have public discussion, but it was definitely in the discussion stage, and it was raucous, because you had people really concerned about their photo in and up in the hand of the government, and, I mean, Nevada is just not Minnesota, but it was... But I do think the launching of the iPhone with the finger has brought a new discussion, and Commissioner Parnell and I co-hosted a conversation with commissioners and sheriffs, et cetera, on facial recognition biometrics in general with vendors, and including Minnesota has two of the biggest vendors in the entire industry and also, I think, one of the most successful. Well, they're both very successful. And there was high level of interest, things like, you know, facial identification being used to help smooth security in county jails. There were just a lot of ideas, high level of interest, but it seemed like it was the beginning of a conversation. It was not a deep conversation. And vendors want to sell. You know, you can't help them. I mean, that's good. But
and then, Mr. Chair, it was also interesting that Mr. Schlegel seemed to say that if you're going to go down any road, that the most accurate is the finger versus the facial recognition. So then it's also funny how much effort is being looked at and spent around a process that might not even be the best process ultimately.
Yes. He 3M hosted one of the international meetings about the standards for biometric identification, and a man from DataCard chaired that, and 3M, who's a big player, hosted it. And they had an early presentation just on what percent of people don't have recognizable fingerprints because they work in construction or they work in some industry. And it was kind of, you know, not something I had ever really thought about it. So I talked to Sheriff Stanek, who is very interested and actually got federal money to do some facial recognition stuff. And Stanek confirmed that it's, you know, it's surprising how many people don't have fingerprints. And, I mean, everything is going to have a problem. And so this idea of three-factor verification has come up, you know, something that you know, some way that you are, and, you know, some aspect of that kind of thing. But I think Secretary Kiffmeyer's point about the importance of this for cleaning up our system, I think that's a starting point. I don't claim to be neutral or non-emotional about drunk driving, but there's 4,000 potential drunk drivers who lost their license and went and got one. And the point that Jeff made to me the first time I talked to him was that after 9/11, two things happened. It became a lot harder for good, upstanding citizens to get driver's license and government IDs, and became really easy over the Internet for anybody to get almost anything perfect from China or some other place of a birth certificate and a Social Security card or some other form. And so there was an explosion of these false IDs, and Minnesota had a reputation, and so people were, you know, taking advantage of that in a way. And so that contradiction of it becoming much harder for regular people in some instances and very easy for a drunk driver. And so I was in a conversation with somebody we had forced to use the ignition interlock because they had been convicted multiple times. It was $1,000 and some plus so much per month, and he said it's $300 to get another set of ID from China. We had created an incentive you know, not on purpose, of course, but it was a reminder to me. You try to think about all the possible things, and then there are things that you never suspect would happen. And so there are lots of different things that are at play in this, and it's now kind of exploded as a topic. So we just are very fortunate to have good people heading it up here. Other items? Thank you, everyone. See you on November 15th. Ms. McCormick, thank you again. This is a really big job.